We're talking with Dr. Brett Carver, OSU wheat breeder, of course, from the OSU wheat improvement team. And Dr. Carver, you had a chance to talk with these flour millers from Mexico, representing the largest flour milling company in the nation of Mexico. And you were stressing to them the job that you're trying to accomplish of producing not just wheat varieties that are high yielding and agronomically, you know, attractive to wheat farmers, but you're also wanting to produce that variety that's a success when it comes to producing high quality bread.
Oh, exactly. I mean, that's what it's really all about. It has to serve a purpose at the table. You know, we talk so much about, you know, with farmers at field days and that kind of thing, what that variety can do in the field. But that's not the end point. The end point is when we get to the table. Mm-hmm. And that's what, to me, is really exciting, is to talk about some of those characteristics that we don't normally get to talk about at a field day. And to visit with these folks from these pretty large milling operations, to get an idea of just what they're looking for. I haven't gotten quite to the point where I want to yet, but I want to learn more about what they're looking for, so that helps me drive the breeding program.
As you try to put together that right, you know, combination of all these attributes of a variety, how do you balance, you know, the agronomic versus what happens when you start doing the baking test?
Well, you know, we always get the first indication on agronomics. That's the one that comes first. So we're often going to make that first cut based on how that experimental line, which hopefully makes a variety someday, does in the field. And then once we make that first cut, we've got that yield level where we want it to be. Then we have to go in and decide, well, within this yield level, what's going to give us the best in-use quality? And, you know, that takes time to figure it out. You just can't do it in 1 year. You know, you want to look at multiple environments to get a good idea of how that variety will respond in the flour and in its functionality in the oven. And so that takes some time to do that. So really it's like a first cut on yield, and the last and most important cut is going to be quality.
You talked a little bit about the fact that you try to take the extra time to really understand what that variety is all about before you're willing to release it and name it.
Yes, and that's something that we just can't take too many shortcuts. And mainly the shortcuts in breeding right now are coming at the stages leading up to yield and quality testing. We can cut some of those stages out a little bit, but we haven't been able to really whittle down that more extensive time and expensive time of evaluating in the field. And I talked about the 3-year window, that being, you know, this kind of the industry standard. We want 3 years of data in replicated test for yield and quality. But I'm just finding out that still doesn't give me enough comfort. And even going to a release committee on campus, much less a committee of millers from organizations like we're visiting with today, and say, okay, I feel comfortable about this variety. We need to put it out there. It takes more than 3 years.
When you think about the lines that are in your program right now, both the ones that have been released as well as those that are still the experimentals, what, you know, how do you feel that you're doing in trying to achieve this goal of, you know, doing both sides of this equation?
Oh, I feel much better because I've gotten some good feedback over the years, thanks to U.S. Wheat Associates. They send us out and talk to millers across the world to find out just what they're looking for. That helps us set our sights on certain characteristics and certain tests that we can perform in the laboratory here. I feel like over time, we're making strides. I really feel like our quality is just as good as, if not better, than what I started with in the 1990s. I know for one, the kernel size has gotten better, and I've got to believe that the gluten strength is no worse. I think in many cases it's better than what I had to start with. And if I can keep that going, and drive that yield curve up, I'll be pretty happy, and I think everybody else will be too.
Mike Schulte, you alluded to the fact from the Oklahoma Wheat Commission, alluded to the fact that the OSU program is unique and that you've remained independent. What does that really mean in your mind?
It means that we have the financial support from the university, from our stakeholders, to drive a wheat breeding program without having certain expectations from the private industry. our expectations are coming from our stakeholders, mm-hmm. and those are the ones we're going to meet first. And have that financial independence, I think, is a trait that it's not really common right now, but I'm going to try to hold on to it as long as possible. Not that we don't interact with the private sector. We do have those interactions, and I really enjoy those, too. And it expands the program, you know, and I think we benefit from that just as much as the private partner would. But it's not like we have to depend financially mm-hmm. on that support to keep this program running. We're not there.
You were showing these folks some things you were calling golden grain. Tell me about that concept.
Well, I think it's important that we identify certain varieties that are coming out of the program. They all meet a certain level of expectation for quality. You know, we've got to meet certain standards. But the ones that meet those standards and go far beyond those standards, I would like to be able to identify with the hope someday that the millers will be able to identify those varieties in the grain channels. And so we've got to start somewhere. And if we can identify those varieties now, down the road, I think they're going to be able to identify those varieties in that grain stream. And so we're just looking at several characteristics that when they all added up, you say, okay, this is an exceptional variety. It's not just a good variety. It's an exceptional variety. Mm-hmm. Now, how is that going to help serve our industry better? We have to be able to identify it. And we can identify it from the get-go, right out of the program, which is what we're going to do.
Let's talk about varieties just for a moment as we wrap up. I guess you maybe can kind of be of a proud dad in some ways. Bentley seemed to really perform well in 2016.
I don't say this in a braggadocious way, but after 6 years of testing Bentley as an experimental line, I shouldn't say that I was too surprised. I mean, we had 6 good years of agronomic data to say, okay, this has some strengths, and it's going to perform at a certain level across many different environmental conditions. We had that information, so I felt pretty confident. So I wasn't too surprised, but I'm always glad to see that and to see some validation in those variety trials. Now we just need to build upon that success. And Bentley is just one step along the way, and I think we've got something coming along that can be even better.
Before we go to that even better, on Bentley, what do you feel best about as far as its overall characteristics?
Well, first, it has that yield potential. It has a good yield ceiling, very high ceiling. But more importantly, what I was looking at, and too, with the help of the weed improvement team, with all the expertise they bring to the table, it has certain characteristics in dealing with stress. And a couple of stresses come to mind. First, the stress we get from late freezes mm-hmm. well into April sometimes in certain springs. Bentley seems to take that stress better than most. Mm-hmm. It also seems to take stress from limited nitrogen. So limited nitrogen availability that might come about through heavy grazing, where the nitrogen is depleted more than we thought, or we didn't add enough nitrogen to begin with. It seems to tolerate that condition very well. Also tolerates low pH soils. It just tends to deal with stress a little bit better than most varieties, and that's what's coming out, I think, in some of these trials.
Right. What's ahead? What's out there in the pipeline?
Well, I'm looking west. I think we can do better in the western fringes of our the area we're trying to serve, that being the Panhandle. So we're looking at a couple of experimental lines that had their sights dead on for the Panhandle. And either dry land conditions or irrigated conditions, high yield conditions. Looking at an experimental line called OK10126 that has good straw strength, it has that bullet influence, bullet parentage. So we know it's got, you know, that bullet kind of straw strength, a little shorter too. You can take those high yield conditions, stand very well under those conditions, and yield quite well in the Panhandle. That's what we're looking at. And then another one right behind it, a Billings derivative. We know Billings has done quite well in the high plains. Mm-hmm. Got the height down on Billings, even on that one, and have a really good high-yielding variety for that area. So that's what you're going to hear first, mm-hmm. and then we'll move downstate.
Okay. You've looked at several different varieties. I think you've got some experimentals as well that are white varieties, right?
Oh, yes. I didn't mention that. Of course, Stardust is the most recent success. And we have another one that actually is a mix of red and white, and I'd like to fish out both of those. And I think agronomically they're going to be equal, but I think the white one is going to be exceptional because now we're going to have a little bit higher yield potential than even Stardust with adaptation downstate and with, and this is so important, that some degree of sprout tolerance, because it's hard to talk about white wheat in this part of the state without mentioning something about sprouting tolerance. Mm-hmm. It's very important. Not so much out in the western part, but here you've got to have it.